Once again, I wish to welcome you to today's meeting of the Portfolio Committee, wherein we are about to receive a presentation from the Department of Basic Education on the Funza Lushaka Bursary Program. I'm sure honorable members, you are aware that on various occasions during the portfolio committees, we have raised a lot of issues that relate to the management, recruitment, training, placement, and the overall operation of the Funza Lushaka Bursary Scheme. So today, the department will brief us on the program of action of that bursary program and give us comprehensive information on the ins and outs of it. And I think that all the questions that you have been raising on previous occasions will be thoroughly addressed. Also to note that today we were supposed to have the second presentation, of which presentation it was supposed to be Faith giving us an update on their APP, strat plan, and the budget. You all recall that Faith was turned back because of minor technicalities on their report. Unfortunately, last night we received an apology and a request from SAFE for the postponement of that presentation, of which you would recall that we have clearly indicated that we are running behind the schedule in terms of the program of Parliament. Our program as a portfolio committee is supposed to be adopted in the coming week during the plenary, so that we are able to prepare for our budget vote. So on that note, I think that having taken that, having considered that request for postponement, we have sought permission from Parliament for us to have a special meeting of the Portfolio Committee, wherein SAFE will come and do the same presentation that they were supposed to do. I don't know if Mr. Brown has that information at hand as to when that Portfolio Committee will be held. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. Yes, we have just submitted an application to the House Chairperson for Friday, now coming Friday the 24th. We'll try and have it at 9 in the morning so we can finish by 11:30 or so. But we have submitted application for a meeting for Friday the 24th.
Thank you, Chair. I will be on Friday, but were you given a reason? We've been supplied with the updated or the revised annual performance plan and the strat plan. Were you given a reason?
We just got two sanctions letter requesting for a postponement. It was not detailed. The reason for what it was that due to technicalities within the office, the internal technicalities. So we think that it would be appropriate for us to allow SAFE to do a proper job. If they do request for permission, let's give them that opportunity. And then I think on Friday when they come for the presentation, they will give us solid reasons as to what is it that bogged them down. But as far as we are concerned for now, I think we must accept the request and then move forward with the next presentation. I would urge members to avail themselves. I know that is at a short notice, but we are running behind the schedule. So on that note, we close that part of this until Friday. we then go to the next presentation, which is supposed to be presented by the department on Khuza Lushaka, as I have already highlighted to you. We'll give over to the department. Over to you. Maybe what we should do is to get apologies.
Thank you, Chairperson. We have apologies from members, of course, our members, Gina, Honorable Van der Waals, Honorable Boshoff, Honorable Majeke, and Honorable Nishanisa. We won't be able to make it for this meeting this morning. Thank you very much. Of course, we have also from the DG's office an apology for his.
We'll then proceed, Mr. Kujani. Thank you.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and Huyamore, Honorable Members, and colleagues. I'm with Mr. Kosia. We will be presenting the consolidated plan on Funza Lushaka Bursary Program. But before we can start doing the presentation, it is important for us to indicate that the implementation evaluation of Funza Lushaka Bursary Program has the Presidency and the Department have commissioned that to undertake this particular evaluation of the Funza Lushaka program. And the draft report has been developed, and it is at the final stages now currently. The task team that is looking into the report has, on the 31st of March, finally looked into the document. And in this regard, it is the Presidency that is meeting the report to be released. It's almost like it is at the final stages for it to be released. I needed just to inform the Honorable Members in terms of how far we are with regard to the implementation of the evaluation of the Funza Lushaka Bursary Program. Honorable Members, what we have done, it is very, very true what the Honorable Chair has indicated, that on numerous occasions we have been receiving feedback from the Honorable Members whenever we come and present the Funza Lushaka Bursary Program. And we identify that it is very, very important that we deal with its administration, its management of the bus bursary, as well as the placement. So we develop what we call a consolidated action plan that takes into consideration all the inputs that we have been receiving in order to strengthen the management of the bursary itself. So what the consolidated action plan entails, firstly, it outlines what is the problem statement. And we have been able to unpack the problem statement by saying what is it that needs to be achieved. And it is very, very clear that we needed to ensure that our action plan must take into consideration the process from the identification of a potential bursar, the recruitment process, and it would look into the training, the placement, as well as the induction of the new teacher into the sector. And that plan needs to be very, very clear in terms of identifying roles and responsibilities, as well as indicating time frames in terms of how we want to move forward with regard to this day with management of the Funza Lushaka Bursary Program. And what I think also, because the levels at which we are operating, there's national, there's province, and there's district, it became important for us to say what is it that we need to achieve. We need to broaden the roles and responsibilities of provinces regarding the identification, because monitoring and support of our persons whilst they are at the universities. Because this thing has been raised regularly, because sometimes the persons are changing subjects at those universities. So this is one thing that we want really to strengthen. And also, and to broaden and improve the effectiveness of the both strategies that we have developed of the district-based and the community-based recruitment campaign and linking it to the citizen program. And finally, to really look into the induction program of the new teachers, and we have learned lessons from various provinces that have already introduced the induction programs for the newly qualified educators that join the system due to various reasons that people have been raising with us. But I think it became important to say, what is the base that we are moving from? What is it that we have been able to do as a department in order to deal with the challenges that I've indicated earlier? We have developed an implementation protocol to strengthen the management of the provincial level, as well as to improve the monitoring of students at universities. And the implementation protocol lists quite a number of responsibilities for provinces in order for them to achieve their objectives in different provinces. That one of those key critical areas, we have just listed quite a few of them. Because for us we need to monitor effectively the supply and demand, it is very important that we are provided with priority needs by the province. So the implementation protocol does speak to that. And also for them to participate in conjunction with us at DBE level, as well as high education institutions, in terms of the recruitment of capable and motivated students. Because previously, we have had sort of an issue that we are doing the recruitment or the processes of identification and recruitment separate from the provinces. So what we have said, it is very important that they participate in this regard, but also ensure that higher education institutions themselves are also involved in the process to take up, to recruit capable students to take up teaching as a profession. And also, because there's an element which is critical, it is NSFAS. Because they are administering our that the province does work with NSFAS and those higher education institutions in the process of determining the criteria, looking into the criteria in the selection of the students with higher education institutions. And also, it becomes important that the provinces assist in providing the students with information from time to time, advising them and assisting them in terms of the areas of opportunities when they leave the universities. That is being done timeously. We know that at the beginning of when you do our data passage, there is a contract that students, but I'll speak to it as we continue with this aspect. And the three key critical component which the protocol speaks to at length is to facilitate and expedite the placement of the card holders. And we strengthen that element. You will hear when we are reporting how far are we dealing with that matter. And as I've indicated, they need to provide both NSFAS and us with information timely every year on the employment status of the student who have chosen their province for placement. And this one is very important, that we get a feedback on those persons that are breaching their contractual obligation while they are in their employ. Once they are employed, it is important for them to tell us that the following students have breached their obligation, so that we can take a proactive stance. Because it's difficult to track so many students when they are in a university central. But because they are employed by provinces themselves, they need to give us feedback to say, these are the students that have defaulted in terms of meeting. And so they'll can be able to pay in the database of the default tax in the respective provinces so that we can take remedial action. The second important intervention that we also looked into based on the inputs that we've been receiving is how do we strengthen the bursary agreement itself so that it is not subjected to to people defrauding it in a way. Whether it is a student changing first year whilst they're in the university, whether provinces are not taking those students on time, and yet we've invested a lot of money into this initiative. The key critical areas that we have created a change, it is a period within which provinces has to offer an appointment or placement to a graduate. That period has been removed so that it allows for a province to do its responsibilities without being limited to the fact that within 60 days you must have been placed, because if you have not been placed, it means you are free to go anywhere. And I think the advice we got was that it is important that we strengthen this element, and this is what we've done. And stipulating to the province where a bursary holder will be placed upon graduation, that it is very, very important that if a province needs to place that student in that area, so that student may not simply leave, that is, we've strengthened that area. And also we've looked into the breach of contract. When a bursary holder at a university changes the subject, instead of being punitive, it became important for us to become considerate and say, let's change it to a law, but so that you can repay, because we're still within the teaching profession. But what you have done is that changed the area of focus that the agreement was talking to. The third component that we have looked into is strengthened in terms of the management is around those selection committees. Because of the fact that we are managing large volumes of applicants, the last time I checked, it was more than 7,000 of the applicants that we are managing. And we needed to strengthen the selection committee itself so that we can be able to ensure that we can be able to attract the best students to take the profession, and we have done it in a manner that also looks at how higher education institutions themselves monitor the student performance and identify students in need of additional academic support. In this regard, what we have also identified that there were learners that needed some devices while they were at higher education institutions. Maybe they've not been picked up while they were at school level, like providing them with some devices. We've been able to do that through the bursary scheme. And as I ensure that the switching of subjects and phases, we have also increased the improved the management thereof through also ensuring that we've got annual briefing with the final year and those students that are entering into the system on an annual basis, just to remind them of their contractual obligation and getting a sense what are the issues, as well as improving their placement procedures with them. I think I touched on this part of last slide when I said that already we have started developing that concept document, and we have put time frames around it on the induction program and also the orientation booklet for the new teachers. And we have said that it can't be that the placement of FUNSA or the management of FUNSA is outside the human resource plan or framework of the department. It should be part and parcel of. When we talk about supply and demand, you cannot talk about supply and demand and manage the FUNSA shadow separately. It should be part and parcel of that strategy. We've been able to pull it together such that the issue around accountability, it also is improved from the level of the provinces. Okay, now I'm now going to hand over to Mr. Gosia to take the presentation forward. Thank you very much, Chair.
Honourable Chairperson, honourable members, my DDG has indicated that the interest in the Phumzani Shaka bursary program has increased significantly in the last 3 to 4 years. We are currently considering, or we have considered in the first 2 months of this year, close to 78,000 new applications. And those new applications, about 10,000 of them have gone to students that are already studying at university. We therefore sit with about 67,000 students competing for approximately 4,000 bursaries in every year. And it places quite a strain on the Department of Basic Education and on the basic education sector to deal with those applications. And that is then one of the reasons why the senior management and the Minister of Basic Education and the Deputy Minister of Basic Education and the senior management of the Department of Basic Education has requested that we look at end-to-end solution for this bursary program that will stretch from the identification to the eventual induction of a new teacher in a school. Just to illustrate where we are currently standing in terms of the number of bursaries that have been available in 2015, as things stand at the moment, and this figure is not finalized, we are nearing 14,000 bursaries that will be awarded during 2015. Again, just to emphasize that by far the most bursaries will go to returning students, with the balance earmarked for our teacher recruitment campaign, in particular the district-based recruitment campaign and the community-based recruitment campaign. We also still offer bursaries to students that do apply through the online system as well. But our first priority goes to our district and community-based recruited applications. Just also, one will note that I think this is the seventh or the eighth year of the existence of the Phumzani Shaka bursary program, and there has been a steady growth in the amount of money that we receive from National Treasury. In 2016, we will cross the 1 billion rand mark in terms of the allocation. So the responsibility to manage, which we believe is one of the largest teacher recruitment bursary programs on the continent, if not in the world, therefore necessitates that we take the steps that we are taking in putting forward this plan, this consolidated action plan for the Phumzani Shaka bursary program. Also just indicate one thing on this slide, and that is one would have expected the larger number of bursaries to be awarded year on year as there's an increase in the bursary fund being allocated. The National Treasury allocates the bursary fund according to the CPIX value in a particular year, and it gets projected over medium-term of 3 years. The increases in tuition, accommodation, books, etc. at universities in most cases exceed the CPI value used by national treasury. And that then impacts directly on the number of bursaries that can be awarded on a year-to-year basis. Just to show some of our success, but also the challenge that we are experiencing with one of the recruitment campaigns, which is the district-based recruitment campaign. 2,000 bursaries annually are being set aside of that. Now, in the previous slide, I said we will be able to award more or less 14,000 bursaries. If you take 10,000 away from that, you are left with 4,000. So 50% of that 4,000 goes to district-based recruitment. The balance is still available through our online recruitment system. And that's very, speaking very rapidly. In fact, the reality is that there's less than 2,000 bursaries available through our online system. And also, just to refresh our memories, honourable members, that the district-based recruitment has at its heart a campaign that seeks to attract teachers from specific areas within our country, within provinces, within districts, with the idea and the hope that learners recruited from that area, from that specific school, will go back to that area to go teach in those schools. It therefore puts the Funza Lushaka program and this district-based recruitment within a broader continuum. Because quite often the learners that we recruit come from hard-to-teach areas and from far remote areas. And the issue of a broader rural development strategy and the issues of incentives for teachers to go back into that area is part of our consideration when one then recruit learners from these areas. The selection of district-based recruited students must be completed by the 30th of September of every year. And the selection of these students is done in partnership. It's led by the Department of Basic Education. The panel consists of Provincial Department of Education, district representatives, as well as higher education institutions who play the role in those particular provinces from where the recruitment has happened. At the end of this district-based recruitment process, the selection of district-based recruits, the selection panel comes up with a list of students that meets the requirements of the particular university and also meets the requirements of the higher education of the Funza Lushaka bursary program. That list gets approved by the HOD of every province and it gets submitted to the university as well as the Department of Basic Education. Based on that list that has gone through the selection process, the Department of Basic Education issues to every selected student a promising letter. This letter, first of all, indicates the university where the candidate will go study. Secondly, it indicates the degree for which this student has been selected. In most cases, the degree, or in all cases, the degree will be a Bachelor's of Education, and it also indicates the phase of specialization. It will be in the foundation phase, intermediate phase, senior phase, or in the further education and training band. And then lastly, it indicates for which subjects this student has been awarded the bursary, whether it's for mathematics, physical science, or for technology-related subjects. That student then receives the letter, and that letter enables the student to be admitted, to be registered at the university without paying the required registration fee, because the letter says to the university, this candidate will receive the Funza Lushaka bursary program and can therefore be registered. So it is a comprehensive process, and that process has also been articulated within the Consolidated Action Plan. So in 2015, thus far, or I can say in 2015, we've awarded 1,606 promissory letters. That is for students that have gone through a process. But this slide indicates the number of students that have been registered. And one will note that there's a slight decrease between the number of promissory letters awarded and actual registration at the university. And the reason for that is the district-based recruitment focuses on school-going youth that are in grade 12. The selection process is concluded in September of every year. We therefore rely on the June grade 12 results or on the grade 11 end-of-year results when we make that selection. And when these students then complete the National Senior Certificate and the results get released at the end of at the beginning of January, in many cases, or in some cases, as can be reflected in the slide, they do not meet the requirements anymore for studying at the university. And therefore you see the drop between the award in promissory letter and the drop in actual students registered. Together with the provinces, we have looked at this and we are articulating in the consolidated plan the following solution. That as a sector, we base our recruitment strategy, we broaden our recruitment strategy to go beyond school-going youth, but also to look at out-of-school youth. Out-of-school youth have gone through the process of writing the NSC. Their results are available at the time of selection in September. And we therefore suggest that we broaden this. But there's one aspect that we need to be very careful on, and that is this out-of-school youth must be out-of-school youth who have not had the opportunity of studying at the university yet. Otherwise, it will be unfair, and it will complicate our administrative system if we suddenly have second-year, third-year students wanting to make use of this opportunity. We would like to use this opportunity and give it to out-of-school youth who have been unable to access a higher education institution. It makes our identification processes very important, because we must make sure that this student wants to become a teacher for the right reason, and then that it's not just about, oh well, this is my second, third choice, maybe I should just go with it. So that we retain the core message of the Funza Lushaka bursary program, which is to attract teachers that will participate in improving the quality of basic education for all our learners. So the solution to this drop is that we would like to broaden it to out-of-school youth. We will still work with school-going youth so that we give opportunity to our school-going youth as well. But the proposed ratio, or the ratio that we play around with in our minds, and it will differ from province to province, is that perhaps to go 30% school-going youth and then 70% out-of-school youth. This slide just shows the areas of specialization of our district vocational students in 2014 and in 2015. In 2015, we had an increase of the number of students that has taken up the FET phase. We still need to work on specific recruitment strategies for the foundation phase. Honorable members, in 2014 recruitment, we took a deliberate decision to favor African languages, indigenous languages in the foundation phase, in an effort to attract more African language speaking, but not just speaking, but students or new teachers that will be able to teach in grade R to grade 1 in an African language. And we've done that based and informed by the introduction of the incremental introduction of African languages from 2016, as well as an expressed shortage within the sector of foundation phase teachers, especially those who are able to teach in an African language. Honourable members, in 2014, we for the first time actively looked at recruiting out-of-school youth in communities. And I think it's from this experience that we draw in order to inform my previous statement around district-based recruitment. We piloted in the Gauteng province. The pilot initially started in Alexandra, but it was broadened to cover all the areas of Gauteng. And we have the participation of community representatives from all over Gauteng. And we worked with them. And in this one, I was personally, this was my baby. I looked after it and I nurtured it. And it was fascinating to be able to work closely with communities within teacher recruitment and to hear the expressed frustrations coming from communities, and then the ability to be able to respond to that and to see how we work. So we work closely with local government, we work closely with communities in Gauteng in particular. Modjadji was incredible because there we were able to work within a rural community, and our first recruitment meeting with the local community attracted close to 3,000 youth in the hall, and it brought to it immediately seemed to sensitize us that when we are going to look at teacher recruitment, there's going to be a whole lot of additional factors that we need to consider, and that brought us to the point of looking at other government departments, in particular in Limpopo, to become part of that recruitment process in order for us to channel students who are not interested in teaching into other areas. But it is labor-intensive because in the end, we were only able to recruit through that process in Modjadji close to 50 students. So we had a pool of about more than 1,000 and we could recruit only 50. Of course, we have to look at the priority areas of the bursary program, and we have to make sure that we still maintain the minimum criteria of Funza Lushaka, as well as the access criteria, the admission criteria that apply to university. And piloted in Modjadji and Gauteng, the different institutions currently have just over 80 students registered with them that are studying teaching that has been recruited through this approach. In 2016 and currently, we are broadening this to all 9 provinces. We are broadening to provinces through the provincial education department, through the district, through local government and community-based recruitment and local community. We also are learning a lot from this particular project that we have together with the Independent Schools Association of Southern Africa. The project basically had its first intake in 2013, and currently we have, in 2015, there will be 60 new students joining this program. They are studying full-time at UNISA, doing a bachelor's in education, specializing in science, mathematics, and English. And maybe I must just clarify at this point. The priority areas of Funza Lushaka is broader than just those three areas that I've indicated. for this particular project with ISASA, we are focusing on mathematics, science, and English. But let's just quickly look in the foundation phase. The priority area is a foundation phase teacher specializing in an indigenous language, in an African language. In the intermediate phase, in 2015, we recruited students that would do a bachelor's in education intermediate phase in mathematics, science, and technology. In the senior phase, the same. A bachelor's of education in senior phase, specializing in mathematics, science, and technology. In the FET, your priority areas are much broader. They include mathematics, science, and technology. Technology can be unpacked into electrical technology, computer applied technology, engineering, design, and graphics. We also look at agricultural sciences, and then very importantly, look at the commercial subject, economics and accounting. And I may have left one or two out, but that is broadly the priority of the Funza Lushaka Bursary Program as it stood during the recruitment in 2014 for 2015. So for ISASA, this particular program, we looked at math, science, and English. Why do we draw a lot of value out of this? Because ISASA has through their experience, established a mentor system to take these interns through. So a student registered with UNISA is studying full-time, but at the same time is working at an independent school, gaining experience of teaching, and is being mentored and supervised by a mentor. The schools are specifically selected, and they must meet specific criteria as well as the mentors. The idea and what we are doing is that once a student has completed the program, they will go into a public school, and we started to place students into public schools where they will take that experience and that knowledge with them into that school to teach in that school. Now, we want to broaden this into public school. And the lessons learned from this program with ISASA, we want to then repeat and use in broadening into public schools. Of course, we will still work with ISASA, but we will also broaden this to other role players. Some of those role players may include the South African Principals Association and others as well that will participate with us. A recruitment program is only as good as the ability of the department to place those students. And I think in the last few years, this has been our Achilles heel. But one of the reasons, and I think probably the main reason why this end-to-end solution, this consolidated action plan has been put in place by the Minister and Deputy Minister and senior management of the department, is in order for us to get this part right. We are currently reporting weekly to senior management on progress of placement. Senior management gets weekly feedback on where are the blockages, and they make recommendations of how they can be resolved. The department is able to see in which provinces placement is not happening, and then they are able to respond to that department. And in some cases, and you will see shortly, honorable members, in some cases, some provinces have said, okay, you can send some of yours that you cannot place to us because we need more teachers, and I will illustrate just now. We've done, and just to illustrate what I said, we've responded where a blockage arises and where a problem arises. We send the team to that particular province and we look at the difficulties that have been experienced and we try and address. We had two visits to KwaZulu-Natal in the Eastern Cape in order to address blockage. We are encouraged by some of the progress that is happening in Gauteng, Free State, Mpumalanga, and the Western Cape. In our conversations with these provinces, they have took deliberate steps to try and improve placement and make it a key program for them. Now, just before I share what is on the screen, just an apology, honorable members, honorable chairperson, the handout that you may have received, on this particular slide, the editing that I've done there, I haven't done properly, so there are one or two editorial mistakes that I've corrected on this particular slide, but in your handout it would not have been. In particular, I think it's bullet 2, which speaks where 2015 has been rearranged into 2105. That has been corrected. And then the statistics for 2015 is a little bit confusing. So, in 2014, we had 4,173 graduates that we needed to place. 654 were not placed, and we've rolled them over to 2015. Currently, we have 4,827 graduates that must be placed. In the medium-term strategic framework says that the DBE must place by the end of June 100% of Kunzalu Shaka was. Currently we're standing at 62%, so we are progressing to reach that 100%. This slide just shows what is the status per province. And I think here it just will be important to highlight Northwest Province, which stands at 103%. And how is that possible? Because Northwest has been able to take on a few extra bursars that couldn't be placed in other provinces in order to address their needs. But clearly, honorable members, you will see why we visited the Eastern Cape, because that is the one area where placement is critical and is not happening appropriately. The other provinces, we believe, are on track to achieve 100% by June of 2015. Where to will we go from here? Just in brief, we've introduced the placement reporting standard for each province. Mr. Kujana, my DDG, has referred to that. This document provides a standard way of reporting and placement for Kunzalu Shaka graduates. It also proposes the use of a dedicated parcel function to track this. We are making progress in this, and this tracking will happen not just while they are studying, but also very importantly after a student has been placed. I'm going to briefly, Honourable Chair, just go through the process map and just indicate. I have touched on much of the details already, but I think it will be important just to take the honourable members through the process map, the business plan of the end-to-end solution for the Kunzalu Shaka bursary program recruitment and placement. Phase one is about determining the demand for certain areas of teaching. We've reached a stage where we cannot afford anymore to
to recruit based on anecdote or recruit on based only what provinces give us. And we've put forward a process to enable us that we can predict more clearly over a year to year and up to a 5-year period what are we targeting, who are we recruiting. For example, the incremental introduction of African language clearly gives us over the years ahead the need for African language teachers to enter our schools, and that will inform the identification and determining of that will inform determining the demand of teachers in certain areas of teaching. Thus, on an annual basis, provinces must do a profile of the vacancies that they have at their school and provide those figures to us, especially in those areas where they struggle to fill posts with qualified permanent teachers due to the scarcity of teaching specialization. Also, provinces will provide a profile of the expected vacancies that may arise due to the attrition which will happen in certain specialization areas. In phase two, I've spoken a lot about the recruitment part of it. I'm not going to go into detail around that again, but just to highlight some points around the identification. Currently, the way that we are selecting our Funzali Shaka bursary program, especially in the last 3 years, I think we've really tightened up in our selection. Our selection process is governed by a policy document that gets approved by the senior management of the Department of Basic Education. This policy document indicates the criteria, it indicates the steps, it indicates the amount that is available to every university, it indicates what to do in exceptional circumstances when selection happens. And that is the key guiding document for a selection committee meeting. So when we gather at the selection committee meeting, we gather at the university, the team is led by the Department of Basic Education, and the meeting is normally chaired by the academic head or the academic coordinator of the School of Education at each of the universities. There's a representative from the province that comes to provide input and to participate in the meeting in order to ensure that we select students based on what the provincial needs and requirements. And there's, in addition, also a member from the financial and administrative team of the School of Education based on the university. We sit and we make it a requirement that the university projects to us on a screen like this a profile of every student so that we can consider that student in terms of, in some cases we can even see the financial background of every student. We can see what are the priority areas that they have registered for. And then based on that, what we have in front of us, if we don't have it in a screen, we ask for it in hard copy so that the committee can consider every student based on merit and making sure that we award the bursary to the right person. I can maybe just use this opportunity also to highlight that once you receive the bursary, you don't get it for 4 years for free. You need to meet academic criteria and show that you are progressing into the next year before the award is made. A student that does not show that they are progressing academically will not be awarded the bursary. However, we will say to that student, pull up your socks if you can prove to end of this academic year that you are back on track in terms of your academic, you will be considered again for the bursary program at the end of the year. But we do not reward poor academic performance with a bursary during the selection. The second thing is the awarding is not open-ended. You cannot receive the bursary for 7, 8, 9, 10 years. The bursary gets awarded for 4 years. A fifth year is there to assist students who may be pulling one or two modules that they have not passed. And the selection committee considers each one of those students in terms of those modules. And it's not automatic that the fifth year's award will be made. That award is not the fifth year award is not a full bursary. It is an award based on what the student is offering in that fifth year and according to the traveling accommodation needs that the student might have in that fifth year. The one area that I'm taking a long way to get to is the area of identification, because that's an area that the selection committee cannot always play a role in. And that's where we need the province, the district, the school, the community to come on board to ensure that we recruit a passionate young person who wants to become a teacher and contribute to making basic education an education of quality. There are many personal qualities and skills that can be explored in identifying learners for a teaching career. And we are putting in place at the moment mechanisms to assist them to identify learners so that it's not just about academics and about merit and about background, but also about what qualities do you offer that will make you a good teacher. The third phase is around enrollment at university. The role of provinces in supporting the process when it comes to enrollment at university is crucial. A province must play a role in, especially with the district-based and community-based recruiters, in orientating the young person that have been recruited and have been awarded a letter to say, this is what you can expect when you arrive at university. When you apply for the university, make sure that you also apply for accommodation. This is the contact person at the university that you need to go to. So it starts from that process after the student has been selected and how we orientate the Phunzali Shaka bursary holder now in terms of first time entering the university and what we expect. The second very important part, and this part we do together with NESFA and the university, is the signing of the bursary agreement. No bursary money gets paid to a student before the agreement has been signed. The agreement must be signed, and then after that, the university will claim on behalf of the student and to NISPA for the money. When the money arrives at the university that they've claimed from NISPA, the university deducts tuition fees, accommodation fees, books, laboratory fees, and food money from the bursary when they make the claim. If there are money left over, that money will be transferred to a student in two tranches, one in the first half of the year and one in the second half of the year. It's important for us, together with university and together with the province, to advise the student therefore during this process of orientation around how to manage, if they have additional money, how to manage that appropriately, because that money must pay for registration in the second year.
Now, the bursary agreement, Mr. Kujana has indicated in that the three areas in which we've strengthened the bursary agreement. So the bursary agreement is signed, and I just want to highlight one aspect, and that is that the 60 days, although it's not in the bursary agreement, members will note that the 60 days, or in fact, in the implementation protocol, it clearly states a province must take 90 days in order to place that student. So we recognize that we perhaps are inconveniencing a student, a graduate, by not placing them immediately, but it is not an open end. It's not free for all. A province signed the implementation protocol in which they undertake to place a student within 90 days. We will also explore, together with the provinces and with NSFAS, a mechanism that we can put in the bursary agreement where we may make it possible for a student to apply to the department to say, I know I have not been placed within the last month. I have been offered an opportunity to take up a school governing body post in a particular school. I would like to request permission to take up that post while I wait for formal placement. And so we will then explore together with the provinces a mechanism in which such applications can be made to the Department of Basic Education so that we can consider them on a case-to-case basis and then allow them perhaps to take up this post with the undertaking that as soon as the letter arrives for formal placements at a school that they then take up that post. Phase 4 is very important. And the role players there is, number one, the higher education institution must monitor and support our first Funza Lushaka bursary holders at the institution. We want to know if a student is struggling in its priority area so that we can provide, together with the university, support to that student and make recommendations to the student. Knowing full well that if a student fails mathematics, which might be their priority area that they've signed the contract for, that the bursary will be withdrawn. So, together with the university, we need to make sure that a student is supported. We need to rely on the province, which is much closer to the university. So the University of Free State, the province of the Free State, it's much easier for them to drive into town and meet with the Funza Lushaka bursary holders. And also with NSFA to support us in the monitoring of the students while they are at university. We started this process in 2014. We've written to National Treasury. We've asked National Treasury to allow us permission to fund the appointment of dedicated administrators at a university. The model that we envisage is to say to a university, here's an amount of money, we would like you to appoint somebody to come onto your payroll, and that person gets appointed onto the payroll of the university under the terms and conditions set by the Department of Basic Education, which is to monitor the Funza Lushaka bursary program, to report on the Funza Lushaka bursary program, and to support the bursary holders at each university. Unfortunately, National Treasury has indicated to us in a letter, which is also provided, that we need to look at alternatives, so we are exploring that at the moment. Phase 5 of this business process is then the placement of a bursary holder. I have already spoken to that when I looked at the slides, honourable members. One area I would like to highlight under this phase 5 is the fact that
provisional letters of employment will be given to graduates so that they already know in advance where they will be placed in the next year. And that is something that senior management has asked us to do and that the department is busy implementing as we are speaking. The sixth phase is now a new area that is included in this end-to-end solution for Funza Lushaka Bursary for the Funza Lushaka Bursary program. And this phase speaks to what happens to a new teacher. Our Funza Lushaka Bursary holders are often placed in hard-to-teach areas or in remote areas. It is therefore important for us to ensure that we put in place programs that will support these teachers, these new teachers as they arrive at school. And that is why we are working at the moment on an induction program that we can give to new arrivals at the school. We see this happening in two phases. The first phase would be a short-term intervention. In other words, we produce a guideline, a booklet, that we can give to every school to say that when you receive a new teacher, whether it's a Funza Lushaka bursary holder or whether it's a new teacher that may have come through the recruitment of foreign teachers, or whether it's a new teacher that has been out of the system for more than 5 years and now entering the school, when this new teacher arrives, look at this booklet and take that new teacher through the steps that is articulated in the booklet. And so that is our first achievement that we would like to put forward and put into every school. And we are hoping to complete this process. We set ourselves the target of completing it by the end of June. That is to have that booklet, or at least to have its content finalized and then get into the printing and a layout phase of it. But that will not be enough. We are exploring what is required for a formal induction program that will run over a year, for example. We're exploring on what is it that the school must do, what is it that the district through subject advisors must do, what is it that the province must do, and what is it that DBE can do in conjunction with its other stakeholders to facilitate this process of an induction program that stretches over a year. A chairperson, that is the process map of this end-to-end solution that stretches from determining the need, identifying, right up to the induction of the new teacher. The next slide unpacks some of the details together with the time frame linked to the sixth phases of the business process. And what is important is that it puts forward the roles, the activities of the Provincial Education Department, as well as the leadership role of the Department of Basic Education within the sector. I'm not sure, I don't think it's just necessary to go through bullet by bullet unless chairperson or the members advise differently. But it correlates with what I've said around the six phases of the business process. And then, with that, Chairperson, I will then come to the end of the presentation.
Thank you very much, DBE. I think Ms. Bakhiri Kotia has really given this presentation a good punch. So, members, there's the report. I think that you can engage with it after getting all the details of the subject matter. I think that without faith, it will be bad for me to deny you that opportunity to really input and make inquiries on issues that need clarity. Arising from the presentation. So the department really needs to be commended for action taken on this program. It's very clear where we are going. I open the floor for members to engage. Can I note hands? Honorable Mguni, Honorable Basson, Honorable Costa. I see Honorable Mashabela requesting an opportunity to be excused because she has got another committee meeting to attend to. On that note, you are excused, ma'am. Can we use the same procedure? The way I have noted you, can you take questions?
Thank you very much. Good morning, Mr. President, and everyone.
Okay, Honorable Khoza is volunteering to later sub.
Oh, okay. I would love to welcome the presentation. It was very much insightful. You know, there are also questions that might come from presentations. My first one is on the issue of what will happen to the bazaar, the present bazaar holder, who has failed because of contextual factors. And then after a year, he or she passes. Will she be considered again? The other issue is the issue of placement of these bazaar holders. Are we also considering the issue of accommodation as a benefit? Because most of the schools are in deep rural areas, which makes the bazaar holders to run away from those schools. Is there any kind of benefit in terms of accommodation rather than transportation, so that these people can stay at those particular places? When I was perusing the papers that I have been given here, there's one which is it looked like an agreement form. I will request that I be explained on 7.3.2.1. Which says, while the student from 7.3.2, while the student's total annual income is below the minimal level set by the minister or NFS, the students will not have to pay any installments. And the other one below, interest will, however, continue to be charged. I want an explanation on those two parts. And the last but one question. I've heard Mr. Kuti speaking about the students being trained at the school, or monitors, or whatever, will be teaching those Funza Dishaka students about the practical teaching. Is there any consideration of talking to the higher education department of doing this annual practical training twice a year to these bazaar holders for them to get experience in the teaching environment? Yeah, and then lastly, the issue of placement after the 90 days has elapsed and bazaar has not been placed, and he or she gets a temporary employment from the SGP. And before going there, he has to apply from the Department of Education. Did you look at the issue of bureaucracy? Because at the present moment, when a person applies from the department, it takes long for the department to approve. And you find that that post is closed. How long should it take for the bazaar to get an answer from the request? I thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. It was indeed very interesting. Chair, I just want to note I don't know what the word is, not disappointment, but I'm actually quite shocked to hear for the first time that the total number of bursaries that is shown as being given is not the number of first year bursaries. We are so often told that we're giving 13,000 or 14,000 or whatever bursaries. If I'm given a bursary, I expect that is a bursary for my studies, not a new bursary every year. So I've always understood, and I am very disappointed that it's not the case, that we are very close to addressing the need in South Africa, but it doesn't seem to be so. Through the Fundzulashaka program, the Centre for Development and Enterprise did a study on teacher supply and demand about two, three years back, and they indicated that we need approximately 15,000 teachers in our schools per year. Now, I mean, I have had responses to questions saying, well, the Fundzulashaka bursary is given to approximately 15,000 a year. We are addressing that need. In fact, we're very, very far from it. But nevertheless, that's a comment. I was quite astounded to hear that. That's a comment. Chair, I would like to ask about the identification of priority areas. I really appreciate that this seems to, even in the short time that I've been involved in this committee, this seems to have made massive strides, really massive improvements. But I want to ask, apart from looking at where you would have vacancies, there are changes in policy. One of them, for example, is the very strong emphasis on grade R. Now, one of the, and please correct me if I'm incorrect, but I have asked questions to the Minister on this, one of the recognized qualifications for a grade R teacher is a diploma in grade R teaching. Fundzulashaka bursaries are not given for that, which I find strange. I come from the Eastern Cape, and like the Northern Cape, like the Western Cape, we have a very high level of Afrikaans-speaking learners. And there is a very high level of Afrikaans vacancies in Afrikaans schools. Fundzulashaka bursaries are not, as I understand it, given for Afrikaans study. And I would like to know why. I personally would judge Afrikaans just as much an African language as any other language, but nevertheless, why? Because there are vacancies. The fact is, there are vacancies. There are 4,400 odd vacancies in the Eastern Cape at the moment, and most of them are in Afrikaans schools, and we're not addressing that through the bursary. Also, in identifying who you give the bursaries to, do you look at, as an example, there was a list of the top 100 critical skills released by Minister Bladen Zamande last year. Minister, I'm not sure if it was Kigaba, but Home Affairs released their list of critical skills, the list that we would give anybody a work permit for to come to South Africa, because we don't have those skills in South Africa. We should be training teachers, a lot of them are technology, we should be training teachers to address those needs. So that we can fill those skill vacancies. Chair, I'm sure all of us receive complaints of late allocation of bursaries. So, and I'm not sure if it's Fundzulashaka, if it's DBE, I think it's NSFAS actually, that the money comes through late. And yes, the students by that stage don't have to worry about the registration, but they certainly have to feed themselves. And they can't. They don't have any money. So that is a major problem. Chair, at one occasion when the Minister was at our committee and we spoke, I asked a question specifically about the very high value, which is about 70,000, if I have it correct, of the 70,000 a year of the Fundzulashaka bursary. I asked that question because a principal actually said to me, kids are going into teaching just because the Fundzulashaka bursary allows them to get a flat and a car, and it's a great bursary. It's bigger than most other bursaries. The minister actually acknowledged that. And she said that she was looking, now when she says she's looking, I presume she's looking with the officials, she was looking at two for the price of one, at requiring kids to study through UNISA, which is much cheaper, and then they would intern at not Suisasa, but at an identified teaching school, which would be fantastic, because at the moment most, it's not just Suisasa, but most Quintile 5 schools are doing exactly that, but they fund it themselves. They've got teacher assistants who are interns, and of course the Quintile 1 schools can't afford that. And I'm very sure there are some good Quintile 1 schools out there who could be teaching schools. But is that being looked at? Chair, I think that is it for now. Thank you very much.
Honorable Mponchani.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Yes, this presentation is a very important one, Chairperson. That's why I had to take a 6 o'clock flight this morning to come here to attend the session. Because, Chair, it has been argued right, quite correctly that there will never be a system of education which is better than its teachers. The training of this. So two issues, the training and the placement. Chairperson, I expressed this in the past. Those teachers who are trained at what do you call this, UNISA? Distance. That has always been my concern. I've been in contact, I've seen them in Japan. They don't have, a one-on-one. They do it on their own. They start on their own. They don't have a physical lecturer in front of them. The first time trainers, you know. I know I went through teacher training, a lecturer in front of me. But how to ensure that we have at the end quality teachers effectively and well trained when people just, you know, like any other, you know, they do their own. That's my major concern, Chairperson. And secondly, I'm pleased to hear this because to hear that when it comes to placement, the department will send will place teachers where they are needed, bypassing this list, open or closed list, and also bypassing the undesirable influence of unions, because when it comes to interviews, they observe, in parentheses, observe, whereas in fact they actually influence who is employed in the school. I'm happy if that's what's happening. The department announced, you'll correct me, Chair, if I'm wrong, but it announced that it intends introducing Mandarin language as a compulsory language subject in schools. Do we have, or would the department have, enough and well-trained teachers for this subject to be taught effectively in our schools? Linked to that is also this question of history being
introduced as a compulsory subject in schools, would we also have enough, or the department preparing enough teachers through Fundo Lushaka bursary scheme for these tasks? Lastly, you started with Gauteng with the selection route. What made you to choose Gauteng above all other? But I would presume Gauteng is largely an urban province, well resourced, but you chose to start with Gauteng. What informed that? But otherwise, I'm pleased, like all of my colleagues, that the department seems to have now a hand in directing the training and lastly, Chair, very lastly. You know, the training, I know when it comes to universities are autonomous. You don't have a say who the university employs. But are these lecturers at universities really familiar with the departmental curriculum? Because you cannot just teach, without being familiar with do we have correct lecturers at these universities? I'm asking this question, in fact, it's a bit unfair because I know universities are autonomous. But if we don't have correct lecturers, then the whole thing becomes wicked. I know she won't allow me to copy on this. I think I will be unfair.
I can see that you are dwelling into higher education. So
That's why, because it's true that deliberately, because they wouldn't, but there are the custodians,
Let's arrest it then, because I think that the department has really gotten the gist of what you want to get.
I hope to.
Honorable Basson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Indeed, the presenter has given us a really full mouth of presentation and has answered most of the questions that we're missing even in the document here that we wanted to ask, of which we thank the presenters. We welcome their presentation, but questions must be there and should be there. On placement, my phase 5. It's something that for me is still not yet clear. Recruiting, whereas we have surpluses that are outstanding, and these surpluses we say we have given or we are going to give them the go ahead to look for other posts that they may get if they get temporary. What if they get these posts on a permanent base? I mean, they are appointed permanent in the wrong field that we have not trained them for. And there comes a post that we see that it needs that teacher, and that teacher is already now appointed permanently because we couldn't place the teacher on time and got a permanent job in the wrong subject, or learning area. What going to do? Are we going to demand a teacher to come back to fulfill what we have trained him for? I'm still concerned with this huge number, because this is clearly states that the information is recently, last 25th March, is just 2 weeks ago, that about 1,875 teachers are not yet placed. It's on this phase 5. I'm still concerned. Is this time of the year? This follow-up doesn't come clear. How do we keep in contact with these 1,800 teachers? Because we have invested in those people. That's my question. The second one, this remedial action of those who do not want to go to the places that we have earmarked them for, is not clear for me. What are we going, because really we are from the oversight whereby schools with suffering schools are having underqualified teachers, are having unqualified grade 12 teachers teaching grade 12 in rural areas. Yes, some have these facilities of accommodation. It's what I noticed in KZN. They have accommodation, but because of the status of them, environment of the area those teachers are placed to, they don't want to teach there. But I want us to be clear, remedial action, we must not just speak about remedial. What type of remedial action are we going to take for those teachers that are not placed? And I'm concerned with this induction, this phase 6, that takes place when you are already faced with this huge amount of work. You know, the call outside there was colleges. It is because of the impact of colleges in a teaching career. Because colleges, they take you through from day one, starting to say, this is my call, or this is my career I'm accepting. They take you through the processes of being a teacher, even dress code, what teaching practices being taken in the classroom, in the where you are practicing teaching, you are already practicing a teacher, of which is not done in university. Universities, it's mostly concentrated on content matter. And for me, how do we support through this Funza Lushaka program? How do we support those colleges that we have already reopened to be colleges? And to redirect those who are having interest in education to apply to those colleges. You are giving them accommodation, Pastor. You are giving them tuition. How do you accommodate? I don't know what those universities, whether do they, I mean those colleges, do they have accommodation? If they have, why don't we make it compulsory that they must study in colleges and in universities than applying to the university of your choice? Because I understand you must first apply, then you will get the bursar. What about diverting them to the colleges that we have reopened to apply in them? Yes, on the point of curriculum, it is really a concern, because preference will be in some students that are from certain universities because they have certain knowledge. For me, I would like to see the Department of Basic Education take taking lead in giving the universities or the colleges, as they used to do, the curriculum that is needed for teachers on training. You know, I had a brother who was once expelled from a college of Good Hope College, something like that, and it was towards examination. He could go and write in colleges, which was in Tanzania or in Eastern East London. He could go and write exams there because it was said the paper is the same across the colleges for external ones. It's common paper for every student, like matric exams. So for me, if we want to treat these bursars of us to equally and to give them opportunity to get job, not by discriminated from where they trained or what, let's give them equal education, I can tell.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also would like to appreciate the presentation. It's so informative, but informative as it is, doesn't mean that we don't have something to check here. Chairperson, that maybe needs a clarity in terms of placement. My take was that you recruit per need. Then I'll say that when you recruit per need, I think mine is right. Yeah. What I wanted to say is that if we recruit a need, why do we at the end of this process have a challenge in placement? Because we wanted 15,000 teachers, and not 15,000 teachers completed. But when we come to placement, we happen to have a problem where you are saying now we will allow some to go to be appointed temporarily somewhere. How do we get this if really we are recruiting or on a need? That's my first question. And secondly, on you see, on recruitment, I just want to check really if the way the selection process is effective. You spoke of set standards. Are they effective? How are they being monitored? If you want to say, you see, when things are done, you see, it's a district level. You see, I'm just seeing a challenge of nepotism. Sometimes I might be, you might be having a parent who is working in the Eastern Cape, coming from Limpopo, and you'll be having children when you are in the Eastern Cape. Are they going to be prioritized in that order? Because you see this is what has been happening in the past 3 weeks of xenophobic. It also applies sometimes, as a matter of nepotism wise. Are they going to be prioritized in that order? One would wanted to say, why is this not done, we don't have a centralized system of recruitment. that is going to be done centrally somewhere. Not look, you just look at an applicant, not knowing as to where is that particular person coming from. That's another one. Lastly, Chairperson, there is a table on page 4 of this small document. Yeah, it reports how the placement of Funza Lushaka, some 20% in the Eastern Cape in 2015. I wanted to check the progress, what is to resolve the post-provisioning challenges in the province. How is it done? To check vis-a-vis the previous years that were affected by placement. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Because I've taken this one because I wanted to speak to this one of recruiting the need. But having said so, we also have to congratulate Northwest because it makes an indication that they really needed this kind of educators and they were able to place them and even go beyond and look for surplus somewhere else. So, perhaps the surplus emanates from the fact that even the funds that are allocated to this pastor is also accumulating. I got an understanding that there is a letter that is attached here that was requesting it as a response in terms of request to use the funds that are accumulated amounts for other related activities. So my question in that is, how is it accumulating if it was really budgeted for a certain amount of students that are supposed to be accommodated in the past?
Okay. To put my own input before you answer so that you are able to shorten the meeting. I think for me, I have to commend the department for the integration that is seemingly apparent. Because you look there in the program, you see the involvement of higher education, the institutions, the community, the labor department. To a certain extent, it's trying to ensure that all stakeholders really play their part. But I also think that we must try, by all means, that we are able to strengthen that part so that we don't lose that important aspect of making sure that you don't blend in a piecemeal approach or operate in silos. The other point that I think is quite key, I like this one of community involvement, even the ratios that you are allocating in terms of how the community must assist in the recruitment and then also the district. I think questions that I wanted to raise have already been raised with regard to countering issues of nepotism, possibilities of nepotism, favoritism, and so forth. And then the other point that I think we have to look at, I think the presentation was quite nice, but the department does not, it shows there in the action plan that you are going to be dealing with the time frames for reporting and all that. You don't even indicate when are you going to come back to us as a portfolio committee to give us an update. So I think you must also add there the time frame, and then also I think also we have to make sure that all that you have listed in the nice report and presentation, we want it to be implemented. We don't want it to remain in paper. It must not be a report. It must be implemented, and really we are going to judge your performance based on that. The other point that I was also impressed upon is the issue of targeting the out-of-school youth, especially in view of what has been happening in the this issue of xenophobia. You know, I think that if we can take the program back as members of parliament, it can really help to alleviate some of the societal problems that we are there. The Department of Labor once gave out a list of scarce skills. To what extent are you addressing that? Because I've noted there when Mr. Kodzia was presenting that he was saying that there are certain areas of specialization per phase, like math, science and technology, math, science, technology and agriculture. How do you talk to all those areas? Because I think as a department, your responsibility is to ensure that you fit the entire market. You don't only lose sight of other areas and focus only on your Funza Lushaka responsibility. I want to check also with Mr. Kodzia on this issue of the Education Expo, because you said it's one of the observations that you have identified when you were dealing with the issue of the two provinces, Gauteng and Limpopo. What action are you going to take since, well, you have identified it as a need? And what was the response from other departments? And then, at UCT, there used to be this program, where they are saying it's a conversion course. You have studied, just as you did education, but you want to be an accountant, you could do a conversion course. So I wonder if this thing is happening, since when you said that your focus is going to be only on out-of-school youth, new entrance to the university. How do you deal with that? Because there might be people who are stuck in other professions, but they wanted to be teachers. How do you assist the program for transition to happen? Aren't you going to offer those students an opportunity to change from one profession to the other? And then, like you say, you want to make education popular or some fashionable career. So aren't you going to allow that opportunity? I think most of the questions have been raised, and I'll stop there. Thank you. Bond.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I think we understood initially the fact that there's no way that you can deal with the BASAR program without talking about HR-related matters. Because the questions are bigger and they affect especially the initial teacher education, which involves universities and looking in terms of broadly the supply and demand. So what we have done, we have looked into this action plan of the Funza Lushaka BASAR program, solely, but it should not be seen to be outside the HR-related matters. There are three interventions that we have done, and maybe four of them, just to indicate that we have integrated this in that regard. If you look in terms of the number of bursary awarded in 2015, it's lesser than compared to other years, even if the number is going to increase. We, because of the cost factor that honorable members have raised, to say it should be ranging around 70% or whatever, but it differs from one university to the other. We convened a meeting in December. In December, with all the deans of education faculty, and raised this issue of the escalation of fees and how universities themselves prioritize other faculties, even outside education, you know, you could understand the frustration that is there. And that's a huge issue. Hence, we've got annual engagement with the deans of education faculty, not only dealing with the bursary itself, you know, but it is important to say that we are getting information that in terms of supply and demand, there are people who are taking teaching out of themselves, not the person. You know, so that we might have reported here around the output of the person and what is happening with it. But we must also maybe provide you with figures to say that how many students are taking teaching as a profession, even outside the bursary itself, so that you understand the output much more broadly, over and above the program itself. But what we wanted to do was to deal with the challenges that we're facing with regard to the program. We'll be able to provide that holistic information. And I think this aspect of having commissioned with the Department of Higher Education and partnered with JET around the offerings of universities to ensure uniformity. You recall that we made a presentation, I think it was Dr. Nick Taylor, who came to make a presentation around the study, because we wanted to find out, if you recall, around this matter that there's no uniformity in terms of the programs that universities are offering, as well as this aspect of improving on practice teaching. Because now the spillover necessitates to have inductions, you know, programs, because of the challenges that we are faced with the more diverse and the autonomous way on how universities are carrying with their own programs. And the research report that was tabled here was very, very clear around that. Now, the key issue is how do we take forward the recommendations of that report, meaning both the Department of Basic Education, I think other members are correct that both the Department of Education as well as the Department of Education, they need to have an input in ensuring that there is uniformity, so that what honorable members have been raising to say, if the course content is the same and it is curricular aligned, it makes it easy for a student to write from one university to the other. I know that there will be a little bit of differentiation here and there, but I think we are taking that particular point so that we can be able to consolidate our response in context. As the honorable member made an indication to say, maybe the program of action must say, when are we coming back to respond quite comprehensively, maybe again the two departments, both high education and basic, to come and make a presentation in this regard. I'm dealing with specifically those broad questions that say, what is it that we are doing in terms of the intervention? Yes, indeed. If you look into the other aspects outside the initial tertiary education, is around incentives. When we talk about the going to the rural area, we talk about the rural allowance, but we know that there were challenges around it. Hence, we agreed to improve the policy around to ensure that accommodation is provided, so that we and also even other aspects of incentives, which I think it was in the previous sitting of the portfolio committee where we made a presentation around how far we with the policy development on the incentives. Because it came with the when we were presenting on the PPN, what are the challenges around PPN? So we made a presentation, but we will find a way of really consolidating some of those issues that you have raised. Now, it's very important that if you look, I'm trying to look at the broadly the question that has been raised. I'm take an example of provinces where you've got teachers who are dislike to the establishment. Hence, we dealt with the profiling of teachers. You say, you see, you will think that your vacancy rate is very high, but you've got a challenge of replacing the food that we have inside. You've got high vacancy rates. At the same time, you've got high rates of unplaced teachers who are dismissed from the establishment. If you look at the 20% of the Eastern Cape, we all know that teachers who are dismissed from the establishment are many in the Eastern Cape. To a certain extent, that one of the members would know, you raised a question to say, why is it that when we talk about the introduction of African languages, instead of focusing to the initial phase, I mean, to grade one and, you know, and grade two, the deployment is also in the equity phase. You raise the same question. It is these things that when you look in terms of HR and how the province is dealing with its own internal problem around dealing with the teachers who are additional to the establishment. Now, it becomes difficult for the Eastern Cape. One, because of the fact that you've got a need, at the same time you've got a surplus. It means we needed to have a good profiling system in the province so that you're able to match the need, that would be what you have, which is critical in that particular province that they're dealing with. But what we have done deliberately was the percentage has increased because we have made a deliberate intervention of going to the province. Because it is unacceptable for the fact that you say that you need mass teachers and cannot be provided with one. One of the members will recall that last year, when there was a challenge in the Eastern Cape, especially around the northern areas and around the areas of Transrainers and others, where there was a need of African teachers of mathematics, were able to provide that list. To say, here is the list of Fuzalushaka teachers who have Africans, you know what, able to teach mathematics in Africa. We've been able to provide that. Because of the fact that if you say that maybe there's this aspect of focusing on the indigenous of African languages, in the district-based recruitment, it is the district itself that says here is a need. And we don't determine that need nationally. The province says, and the district says, we've got a problem of Sesotho in around Matadiel. I'm making an example of Sesotho teachers. Then it means their recruitment is based on that particular need. Another mismatch that we found in the process is that once you have identified this specific need and you're taking this person to a higher education institution like universities over the period of 4 years, that vacancy can be filled in between you because it's not going to wait until that student completes. Okay? Because of attrition or other needs, it's going to be filled in. Giving a challenge to a province now to actually apply. So, when you say that it's based on the need, and why is it that you can't place 100% immediately? Is this because after you have declared your post basket, immediately you'll find that a certain school will lose this half, another school will gain this half. So you are dealing with that process of management of moving this half from one school to the other because of this, because another school has gained, another school has lost. Now you need to manage. It's more HR related matters that needs to happen in between, which gives into effect the challenges that other provinces might face in terms of really reaching the levels that we're talking to. But we have made an intimation to say, because we've got now the reporting tool, that we're managing this, the person in particular, on a weekly basis, to ensure that we place all our personnel, because money has been invested in this system. And when you look out there, there is still a shortage of mathematics, right? So it means we must do something very proactive. I'm just trying to say, what are those some of the challenges that we are coming needs to give us a sense of how many teachers are teaching what and the areas of competencies, so that it tells us, tells the system, where do you need to recruit much more. That is why what we're talking about, Funza Rushaka, there are these other initiatives that we are looking upon so that we can improve. Yes, honorable members are correct. There are a lot of lessons that we are learning out of our partnership with ISASA, because of the fact that they are really experienced, you know, in terms of management and improving curricular delivery into the schools, the independent schools. That partnership is not only in terms of the rents and friends, but we are learning a lot of lessons in terms of how do you assist the teachers, okay, in those schools that will be receiving, if we talk about public schools, the induction process that they have, the coaching, the mentorship, so that the lessons that we have, we can be able to transfer that knowledge base into the public schools. And we are also correct to say that once we are coming up with these many initiatives, it is important from those lessons to say, this is actually the route to go. That is why that partnership that we have with ISASA, to say actually this is the route to go. Once somebody is in the school, is actually corresponding. But it, and it's supported here at school level. But Honorable Mbojana comes up with another dynamic to say, if some of this element happens around training, you have some of your lesser students, because long distance, they're not supported, you know, at the school. It's something that we want to investigate. Is it part of the ISASA, or is it part and parcel of the awarded bursary to students who are in that university? You see? Yeah. So that we can be able to understand the difference between those those two categories of the partnership that we have with UNISA. You are correct when you say that the introduction of, or the changes in the curriculum influences how we structure the bursary itself. Like, if we talk about the introduction of history as compulsory, would we be able to have teachers, enough teachers to teach history? If we talk about Mandarin as a language, would we be able to have enough teachers? When Mr. Butia reported, he was able to say there was this initiative, there is this initiative around the introduction of African languages. Hence the focus on the foundation phase has been much more on the African, you know, in terms of the recruitment. Which is, these are the sum of the issue to say that any initiative that comes in must be ready be supported. If we look about whether these lectures are familiar with the curriculum, that's the most difficult question for ourselves. Because of the fact that we have not assessed or we are part and parcel of the employment processes, you know, it might be important for us to engage with the higher business institutions themselves around this big question, you know, so that at the end of the day, some of the questions, we might not only come here, Honorable Chair, with the Department of Higher Education only. We might be able to come with representatives from the diaspora, so that some of the advices are very, very important, so that the higher education institutions are able to understand the challenges that we're faced with and appreciate it. So that higher education and DBE must be able to say what is therefore our responsibility and our roles and responsibilities. Yes, I think there were very, very serious questions that Honorable Basson raised, which says the have another program called Indaxis. And we cannot agree with you more, because this is what we are also receiving. Meaning, it's one of the questions that we ought to be working with high-speed institutions, the Department of High Education and ourselves, because it cuts across all of ourselves. I still think I've touched on some of the key issues. Maybe Gerrit will deal with the more detailed one around the agreement itself and other aspects. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Jefferson. Thank you, DDG. I think my DDG succeeded to provide he did me a favor. He touched on all the more difficult ones. I will have all the easy ones. just in terms of the bursary agreement and the paragraph referred to, Honorable Khoza, what that paragraph says is that repayment will only happen when a student is able to repay. In other words, we cannot expect that repayment happen while they are studying at university or while somebody is unemployed. That would be too much. The repayment will only happen when there's formal employment and the money can be deducted from the payslip that the student receives. The issue of 90 days and the question that you've asked around the administrative burden, if students write, I think you are correct. If the Department of Basic Education needs to manage that by themselves, it will create for us an administrative burden. It is therefore important for us to work closely with provinces. And that is why the end-to-end solution highlights very strongly the role that provinces play within that. The letter refers to National Treasury. In the letter, we do refer to this mentioned name of rollover funding. Rollover funding happens when students have been selected, but before the bursary agreement is signed or there's a formal agreement with them, they withdraw. In other words, we have additional money that is not being spent. The second reason is when the university charges for some reason fees lower than we've initially budgeted for. But I think what we've picked up over the years is that in terms of rollover money, and the reason is that it averages between 6 million, 7 million rand a year that is part of the rollover funding that is left over. And one of the strategies that we've raised with National Treasury to use the rollover funding is that one, National Treasury said you should put it back as part of the total bursary agreement, and then secondly, we also looked at it with NSFAS to deal with the January to March period. The bursary pays in April, and that puts strain on bursary holders for the period January to March, especially for the first-time applicants. And it's therefore for us to use some of the rollover money to facilitate the January to March period, which is a difficult time for bursary holders. However, having said that, that can apply to new applicants, first-time awardees. It is important that we engage with students who will be in their second year and third year and remind them to manage their bursary money properly, so that the period January to March is part of their budget. A second year student cannot say to a university, but the bursary have not paid yet, therefore I cannot pay my registration. The student must know that the bursary money that they receive this year will be the bursary money that will be used to pay their registration. allocation as well for the next year. And my DDJ has touched on the issue of UNISA. I just want to add one thing. UNISA has introduced, UNISA is one of the pilot universities of UNISFA, so they've introduced this concept of SBUX system. And from an administrative perspective, it has created for us in the DBE a few headaches. Many students are unhappy with the way this this system is impacting on their freedom to use the bursary according to which they want. I think it's a good thing in one way that there is more regulation and restrictions in terms of how the bursary money is used. We are avoiding this practice where students receive bursary money and the bursary money is sent home. Now we are sure the bursary is used for what is intended person, which is to enable a young person to buy the books, to pay for the accommodation, and to pay for the tuition. But in implementing the SBUX system, there's a lot of unhappiness among students. There's a lot of teething problems, and some of that spills over to the DDE and the Funza Lushaka bursary program that we must manage. So when we then look at UNISA as a provider as part of Funza Lushaka, one has to consider that. And perhaps we must be a little bit
so that we move along with the presenter to talk about SBUX system in UNISA. What is it?
Explain the acronym. There are a lot of acronyms in the basic education portfolio, so you will pardon
me. I will put myself on the spot, but I will try, Honorable Chair. The Funza Lushaka bursary is financially administered by the National Student Financial Aid Scheme. The DBE does not pay money to universities or students. The National Student Financial Aid Scheme is responsible for this. In 2014, the National Student Financial Aid Scheme has introduced a new way of paying money to students. This new system of paying money to students is what they have termed SBUX. SBUX, I don't know what it stands for, but what it means, previously, bursary money or other money that NSFAS administered was paid to universities, and universities will do their deduction and pay what is left over to the student. The new SBUX system, and by the way, it's being implemented at 5 universities, UNISA, University of Venda, Durban University of Technology, but those are the two or three that always gives us a hard time, so I remember them. But what it means now, instead of paying the money directly to the university, and then the university pays the student, now they pay it directly to the student through a voucher system. So in other words, the student signs the bursary agreement, and then an amount of 1,200 rand, for example, will be in the form of a voucher on the cell phone of the student. The student goes then to ShopRite to buy from ShopRite, and they cannot go anywhere else at this stage. They must go to ShopRite, although there are other vendors, but ShopRite is the main one. And then they can cash that voucher at ShopRite to pay for the groceries that they need to buy food. So in other words, there's more control and checks and balances that's been put in place. Students complain about it all the time, and they are always thinking that NSFAS is not paying them the money that they are required. So it creates for us a lot of headaches. We've established that UNISA are a task team consisting of DBE, UNISA, and NSFAS to try and address this issue and to communicate with students. We will do the same at the University of Venda, where there's also similar programs, and the other university, sorry, is Nelson Mandela Metropolitan University. We've also this year started to get the same complaints from them. And it is about communication, but it addresses the concerns that members have risen, has raised in terms of, isn't the bursary too luxurious? This way of doing it stops students from buying luxury cars and things like that. It's that practice, we've heard about it, and we've tried to address it with the university because it's unacceptable. This bursary is there to pay for the studies and to enable to produce better teachers for the country. And so the SBUS has advantages for us, but it is going through a process of teething problem, and we are addressing it together with NSFAS and the university.
I think let's take it as a homework. That is like, let's all go and find out what is it all about. And then the department must give us a feedback when they come back to give us a report back in the next session, which will be scheduled, to give us a thorough explanation on how you are managing that thing. Because I can see that you don't have all the details at hand with regard to that part on how the disbursements really, you know, the operational issues. So I think let's agree that we give you that opportunity to go and craft up something so that we are able to fully understand how this disbursement is managed. Because I also have a view, because I think that it's not every student that qualifies for 70,000. Some of the students need only 12,000 if you go to a college. So if the bursary is 70,000, that is why the opportunity to buy a motor vehicle arises, when you have a surplus of about 58,000 rand. So it's a deposit for a car. So I think many proposals will come as we get that report on how to effectively make sure that it's being efficiently run.
Noted, sir, we agree with that. And I think with my DDG's permission and leadership, we perhaps will get NSFAS to join us in that presentation as well. There was a question, chairperson, on why Gauteng for the community-based recruitment. We worked in two areas. We worked in Limpopo, Mujaji, which is a rural community, and Gauteng presents the opportunity to work in high-density informal communities. It's two dynamics. One has to have an experience of both the dynamic, the rural dynamic, as well as the high-density informal community settlements, and I think we've learned from that process. So the choice of Gauteng was deliberate. Also, Gauteng was a cost-saving for the department, because it's located close to us, and it cut down on traveling and accommodation costs for us. So that is what informed Gauteng and Mojaji Limpopo. I can assure honourable members and honourable chairperson that I think the last
maybe the first 4 years of Funzali Shaka, we were not strong enough in selection, and we've allowed universities to dictate to us. But that period has passed, and the last 4 years, last 3 to 4 years, DVE has taken a policy decision to take the lead in terms of selection and the selection processes at university. We've prescribed the policy that must happen, and the DVE is involved in every minute of that selection committee. So when we, it might be that a principal favors his own child for the bursary program and puts forward the application for Funzali Shaka, that principal or that district official is not part of the final selection. That selection gets done by the DVE and the university and the provincial official. So it cannot and it will not allow for nepotism and for manipulation to happen to favor somebody else. The selection is informed by the academic requirements that must be met for the bursary program. And I am confident that the way that we're doing selection at the moment is the right way, and it meets the needs in terms of quality that must be. The area that is missing, and that is what my DDG has reported on, is that profiling, to know that who we select makes up the numbers that is required within the system, and that is what the end-to-end solution has been, is addressing, and we will be doing that. Want to add, Mr. Gojani has covered the work that we've done with universities. I just want to add one aspect, and that is that the Department of Basic Education is represented on a committee that sits on a monthly basis at the Department of Higher Education. The committee is called the National Evaluation of Programs Committee. The task of that committee is to evaluate the teacher training programs to ensure that they meet the minimum requirements as set out in the minimum requirements for teacher education qualification policy. And that policy has really tightened up the minimum standards for teacher practice. It has tightened up on making sure that the issue of inclusivity is mentioned, is featured strongly in inclusive education. In the third area is that alignment with the curriculum. So when we sit in the committee and we go through the program, we make sure that there's an alignment with CAP. For example, we look at how does the university incorporate the CAPS curriculum within the program that they present to us. The minimum requirements for teacher education quality has come into effect from 2011, so the process that is busy happening at the moment is that all higher education institutions is busy changing the teacher education programs to comply with this minimum policy. And we work at the moment through that committee with higher education.
My sister is still looking because there were a lot of questions. We would look into this issue of great art because we know for a fact that the program is supported by ICTBC. terms of the training, you have a program by ECCPC that we're working with certain universities, like the Northwest University, in the provision of a program for Grade R in particular. How it is supported, it is very important for us to investigate on how the ECCPC is supporting the training of Grade R educators vis-a-vis the provision of the bursary for them. So we want to say we note the question so that we can be able to respond to it adequately on that one. But also if you look at how we responded on Afrikaans speaking learners, I've given a response to indicate that through the district-based recruitment, it is the districts themselves that identify a need. Okay? If, for instance, those communities, or that particular district identify Afrikaans, okay, as an area of need, we don't stop it. We will encourage it. And I've indicated as well to say that when there was a shortage of teachers in the northern areas, we're able to indicate how many of the unplaced bursars that we have, and we are able to support the northern areas and the areas of suffrage and the other using the bursars. And there were a lot of the Afrikaans bursars who majored their subject using Afrikaans instead of English. That's what we've been able to discover, and we'll be able to assist Eastern Cape in that regard. So it should not be read that there is no focus on Afrikaans, because we know that Afrikaans is one of the African languages in the country. But where there's a need, I think honorable member can be able to expand it on how we can improve in that area as well. I think there are issues that Honourable Chair you have raised, which we might have had, we might need maybe to look to go back and look at. The issue of the out-of-school youth in particular, you made quite significant inputs for us to consider, especially those graduates who maybe need to be assisted, because what we've looked into was to look into those that were the first time, as we have reported. But if you say that there are those within who might have wanted to take maybe engineering, and they are already in the universities, maybe on their third year or fourth year, and want to convert into teaching, what is it that we need to do? We want to take that as a point of reference for us to go back and have a look at positively. And also you made mention on the aspects of the expos, because on what would be the future of those expos, I think ministers and deputy ministers have been addressing quite a number of these, wherein we gave opportunity through the utilization of other sitters to see what are the opportunities are there that the sitters are provided. And Fundal shall have become part and parcel of those. And I think the advice is that even when other departments are going out on the outreach, we must be able to ensure that we have a gazebo and are able to provide information to the general public. As Mr. Boutier has indicated that when we went to Mushaji, there was a lot of interest. But we ensure that we don't only go as education. We will invite other departments to participate in the process. So it's something that we need to strengthen the advocacy the part of. I think we'll be able as well to provide members with some booklets and leaflets around the criteria. material that is being used as we are expanding on the community-based recruitment, so that we can be able to enrich the documents that we have provided you on. To say, if you are saying we have been to Gauteng and Mutati, if we are expanding to other communities, what does it mean? What are the guidance that we need to provide? So we'll package information and provide to the members. Because honestly speaking, there are many young people who might have passed metric very well, who are in the streets. And how do we afford them with an opportunity? That is what the aim of this initiative of community-based. So we need to provide you with information so that as you go and do your constituency work, it's something that you also have with your friends. So I was just picking up on what the Honorable Chairperson has indicated in appreciating the integrated approach, working with stakeholders and communities to ensure that some of the issues that we are dealing with education reflect that indeed education is a societal matter. Thank you very much.
If there are specific issues, I'll just give that small opportunity for follow-up. Honorable Ngoni, Honorable Khoza, in that fashion.
It's my question that I have asked, the first question that I asked, that if the child has failed, is he or she given an opportunity for the father if maybe she passes the following?
Yeah, Chairperson, mine is an appeal to say on the issue of the feasibility study in terms of the community recruitment of housing, that if perhaps there is a more biasness towards the more needy areas in the rural areas like the Limpopo and the KwaZulu Natal, we would appreciate it because it would give us a sense of what we need as a country.
Thank you. You know what, members, I think you must observe that there is a balance, because they've taken the more urban and the rural, Limpopo and Gauteng, just to balance issues so that you are able to understand both dynamics. But I know that the bias of government should be in rural areas, that should receive more attention. There is a point that I wanted to raise with regard to the letter from National Treasure. I think that for it to be part of the presentation as an extra, it wanted to draw our attention, particularly on the bullet number 3 for the denied approval for funds to be used for the administrative assistance at university, of which we have had Mr. Kotsie indicating that they are currently using the existing support system in universities. For me, I want to make a proposal and looking at the view that each and every program of government must be able to assist government to drive other goals that are there. And one of the goals that we have identified, actually a priority that was identified, was to create jobs and opportunity, particularly for young people. So on that note, I wanted to make a proposal to the department that it refrains from asking for more money. It finds an opportunity to try and within their own budget and allocation, create space for interns or learnerships on this one.
it might either be funded by provinces or what, and then it captures this part of the admin assistance instead of saying you want a separate allocation only for the admin assistance. So I'm just proposing that let's look at the budget that we already have, because each and every program might be having that leverage to create an opportunity for jobs. Thank you.
Chairperson, just to respond to Honorable Mbuni around the if a student fails, are they given another opportunity? Yes, they will be given another opportunity, but they must first prove themselves. So there will be a year where the student is not funded. If at the end of that year the student has shown that they are back on track and they will be able to complete the degree within the set time, then we will take up the student again and fund it. But we cannot reward failure. So in other words, the student must first show again that they are up. And when we look at that student, we will consider the context within what happened. So we will consider what may have happened and transpired during a year in that student's life and in the student's family. When that decision is made. But yes, we cannot afford to lose bursary holders. If we funded somebody for 1 year, an investment has been made in that person for 1 year, and if we lose that investment, then it's really a loss for us in terms of the bursary program. If I am allowed to, I just want to respond to the issue of grade R. The grade R diploma only allows a teacher to teach in grade R itself. The Funza Lushaka bursary program feels that the investment is bigger if we fund somebody that is able to do the B.Ed foundation phase. That person will be able to teach in grade R right up to grade 3, which gives us more value for money. Also, the grade R diploma is, strictly speaking, not an initial teacher education qualification, because it allows somebody that has been a practitioner at one point to upgrade themselves, their qualification, into another one. And the Funza Lushaka bursary program do not fund upgrading qualifications. We only fund initial teacher education. And then the third reason is that if the department had to decide to use Funza Lushaka to fund the grade R diploma and the upgrading of practitioners, the bursary would have been almost absolutely absorbed into grade R. 4,000, I think between 4,000 and 6,000 bursaries would have been taken immediately, would have already exhausted what is available, and we would have then strategically missed out on opportunities in the other phases that also require funding. So I think the department, and as my DDG has said, the exploring with CETA was therefore very appropriate and necessary. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. We have noted the request for us to see what are the lessons learned for us to expand on the committee based, given the fact that we have done both scenarios of the Gauteng as well as Mutati in going forward. I think we'll provide that information. And we also accept the point that we have raised, Honourable Chair, for us to look at other opportunities in terms of maybe learnership to assist and or to deal with how we ensure that if the National Treasurer could not provide this, and I think National Treasurer is Chair, just one small question. Does the department have the numbers of applicants whose request for help was declined? Those who applied, they would qualify, but there were no funds. Do we have such numbers?
What numbers are you referring to? Full numbers or...
The numbers of aspiring. I mean, say for instance, for instance, we have students doing teacher training, but who applied for Funza Lushaka bursaries and they couldn't get any. Do we have data for the numbers for that?
I don't have the information here at the moment, but it can be obtained. I think it's considerable if one thinks that you receive more than 67 applications. Yes. 70,000 applications. And you only award a maximum of 14,000. So the list of those who were unsuccessful is considerable. Maybe just a reminder to the members that the purpose of the Funza Lushaka Bursary Program is always very important to remember that it is not a not directly linked to poverty alleviation. It's an indirect benefit that we can use as a strategy. I think the primary purpose for the bursary program is to have a good, well-qualified teacher standing in front of the right classroom that they have turned to, that they have trained for, in order to ensure that that right teacher in the right classroom contributes improving the quality of basic education.
Members, I think we have exhausted questions, comments. The ones that are still there, we'll reserve them for another session. So what I want to put before the meeting is that initially when the meeting started, we hinted that there's supposed to be a portfolio committee meeting on Friday, and then an application has been submitted to the office of the house chairperson for approval. I think that approval has been granted, so that meeting is proceeding as we had requested. I think it's going to be at 9 o'clock in the morning. The venue will be communicated. I would suppose that all the members have documents. Possibility is that we will get updated versions relating to this. Before we close the meeting, I think it will be appropriate for us to adopt minutes of the previous meeting, and then also a report. We have got three sets of minutes that are there for the 17th of March, the 24th of March, and the 14th of April. I would suppose that members did get electronic versions of the minutes. Cindy will distribute the copies, the physical copies, so that we are able to process that. We have only 32 minutes to deal with that before lunch. So I think if you can be expedient, by 1 o'clock we'll be out of here.
remember. Hoping that all of us did receive the PT department. Thank you very much for the good presentation. In the coming week, we are going to be dealing with the report for SGB election. We hope that we'll get documents on time, department, so that Mr. Brown, I think also one point that you have to attend to is to make sure that the department has got the correct venue on time. Earlier on, I saw Mr. Mahada was painting. We nearly got Mr. Mahada expired. So I don't want to see that again. Thank you. On the opening of the school in Western Cape, the Valala Primary School, Honorable Lovemore. On the 27th of the delegation comprised of Honorable Gina, Honorable Lovemore, Honorable Van der Waal. Were you not there? Okay, so let's correct that error. So I think we must reserve it. It's a reserve. If the chair was here, we could have had an inventor. We go to the minutes of the 17th of March. Do we all have copies? So let's check. Page 1. It was on the budget review of the Department of Basic Education Vote 14. I would suppose all members were there. Only certain people were not there. Things that are not here were not there. But let's look at the report. Page 2. The 17th of March. We were all there. That's where we received the report from the minister. The budget was page 3. Are we fine with page 3? Page 4. I think the filling of on paragraph number 2 on the non-negotiable, Mrs. Lucy Lehe. It's not E. You substitute the first E with an I. It's Lucy Lehe. Yes. S-I-M-E-G. It will follow through in all the paragraphs. Page 5. Observations number. Let's check the consistency of the report. Are we fine, members? Content, consistency. Page 6. If there are no issues raised, let's adopt the report. The minutes, Honorable Basson. Seconder. Honorable Zuni. 24th March 2015.
We were dealing with the reports, budget review, ELRC, and then we received also a report from Umalusi on the quality assurance of general further education and training. Page 2. Page 3. Page 4. Page 5. Page 6. Observation. Are we fine, member? If there are no issues on page 6, page 8, can we adopt the minutes, Honorable Khosa, Sekenda, and Honorable Mbuni? For 10th April minutes, we are dealing with SAFE budget review. You don't have it. 14th April. Can we check the report, whether it reflects what happened on the day of the 14th? Page 2. Page 3. Page 4. Page 5. Page 6. Page 7. Any issues, remember? Page 8. Can you move for the adoption or are you raising a point or moving?
Yes. Well, both. Chair, I was looking for the concern that was raised about the... No, the concern in the meeting that was raised about them saying that they got their mandate from the African National Congress. It was raised by myself and my colleague from the IFP, and it's not minuted. I would like it to be minuted. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Any other matter? If not, can we move for the adoption? Honorable Benton, Honorable Khosa is taking the... Members, I think we have dealt with the outstanding item as a point of our announcement. On our emails, we received letters, invitations by the Catholic education. Yes, the institution. Yeah, Catholic Education Institute, represented by Mr. Pasensile over there. Kenny Pasensile has invited us to a roundtable discussion wherein issues of honor assessments are going to be discussed. So members are reminded to join them. I think it's going to be on Monday. Please go back to your emails and check. You have to go there and send the agenda for South Africa so that Parliament and the views of Parliament are seen and heard over there. So those that will be having time, because Monday is a constituency day, we request that you can avail yourself to that and get in touch with Mr. Pansensi. Mr. Pansensi is a member of this committee. He started attending this portfolio committee. He has given us a lot of support, moral support, and made a lot of contribution to his, through his institution. So I think it will be worthwhile for us to even go there and support and even contribute in shaping the views of the society around educational matters. Thank you very much for being good in this meeting. I hope on Friday you do the same. On Saturday, my mother's tombstone will be unveiled in Mafikeng in the Northwest. So those who have tickets, you can still fly there, although we don't have an airport. You'll have to drive from Johannesburg. So you should start at 6 o'clock. So it's a word of mouth. We don't have the invitation card because she was very old from that old order. So I want to be part of Friday's meeting.
And can I tell you? We read on the newspaper that the chairperson's husband was involved in an accident in housing.
So actually, that's the reason why she has not shown up. She's giving moral support to the husband, although he was not injured. There has been a person who lost his life in that accident. I think for the husband, it's mostly trauma, according to what the chaplain has highlighted to me. So the chaplain will be around to share the meeting on Friday. Thank you very much. Listen to just give her more. Thank you very much.